Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, how many Jews were there in Zimbabwe at their peak in the early 1960s, and how many are there now? After the expulsion of the Jews from Spain in 1492, Judeo-Spanish communities spread throughout the Mediterranean, Europe, and the Arab world. One of the more influential of these communities was established during the height of the Ottoman Empire on the island of Rhodes. Because of a new wave of political turmoil in the early 20th century, many Sephardic Jews left Rhodes, migrating to many countries, including southern Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe, where Stella Cohen was born. Deeply inspired by her roots and constantly immersed in its traditions, this artist and lover of Sephardic cuisine has set out to record the legacy of this world. In 1986, she co-authored the spiral-bound cookbook Sephardic Cuisine, which was independently published under the auspices of the Sephardic community of Zimbabwe, and we recently spoke with her about Stella's Sephardic Table, her book of recipes, personal anecdotes, and Ladino sayings. This week, Stella is speaking with us about the Jewish community in Zimbabwe. Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Stella. I would like to ask you a little bit about your own background and about the Zimbabwe Jewish community, because I think there are a lot of people who don't even realize that Zimbabwe has a Jewish community. Your family, your community was originally from the Greek island of Rhodes, and I was wondering if you could tell us first a little about that community and how they got to Rhodes to begin with and when and why they left.
Thank you. Lovely to have this opportunity to chat to you. My family are originally from Spain with the Spanish Inquisition 1492. The Jews from Spain were welcomed with open arms by the Sultan of the Ottoman, or what was then the Ottoman Empire, and they took refuge, my ancestors took refuge in the island of Rhodes in the Mediterranean, one of the Dodecanese islands in the Aegean Sea, where they lived and prospered and flourished, carrying their traditions for centuries.
About how big did the community grow to be there in Rhodes?
I don't know what at its height it was, but there was a Jewish center called La Juderia, where there were a few synagogues, and they continued their speaking their beloved Ladino or Judeo-Spanish, and the cuisine that they brought with them became interwoven with the Greek and Turkish as well.
So when and why did they leave Rhodes, and where did they go?
Okay, due to economic hardships in the early 1900s, a wave of Rhodesian adventurers, including my father, Sam Hannan, chose to settle in Salisbury, which is now Harare, in about 1936. My father was one of the adventurers who chose to settle in Rhodesia, lured by the stories of the gold rush and the mushrooming trading companies that were being established there at the time. The Rhodesian immigrants endured a lonely existence as they experienced very harsh conditions living in areas infested with bilharzia, malaria, and sleeping sickness.
They were real pioneers. I mean, you know, you don't really think of Jews going from Europe to the deepest Africa, especially at that time in history. And I think a lot also went to the Belgian Congo at the time.
Yes. When they arrived there, they made decisions whether they were going to stay around in Rhodesia or go to the Belgian Congo, as you so rightly say. And they usually arrived indebted to families that had sponsored their journey. Although proficient in many Mediterranean languages, they would study English only after a day's work with probably a paraffin lamp, and then they'd slowly pick up the African language, the local language, which was Shona in Rhodesia, Zimbabwe. And as the time passed on, their hopes and aspirations were that they would earn enough to sponsor a sibling or a member of their family and bring them. But alas, that wasn't to happen for many because they perished in Auschwitz.
When they arrived, you said that they were lured by the gold rush. Did they become miners, or what kind of professions did they have, and how were they received by the local people?
It's only by word of mouth, but it appears that they weren't in the mining as such. They were little trading companies, and they would work for an owner and slowly get a salary and work their way up. And when they earned a little capital, then they went to have their own trading company or whatever they desired or could afford. And they worked really well with the local people.
How large was the Jewish community in Zimbabwe at its height? Do you have any idea? And what kinds of institutions did they have?
At its height, they numbered 2,000. By 1961, the entire Sephardic and Ashkenazi population peaked at 7,000. In 1987, the Zimbabwe community, however, shrunk to as little as 1,000, and most members were immigrating to South Africa to seek better economic conditions. Today, however, we have 75 souls in both communities, only 50 in the Sephardic.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the Ashkenazi community. So there was there already an Ashkenazi community there when the group from Rhodes arrived? And what was there a relationship between the two, or did they kind of keep separate?
It was a similar story, but there were separate communities. Each Cape kept their own tradition, their folklore, their way of life. And it was quite something for a Sephardic and Ashkenazi to marry at the inception.
That happened in a lot of communities. It was regarded as a mixed marriage. What, if any, Sephardic traditions, such as language, food, music, does this tiny little community still have? And is there a younger generation that this is being passed down to?
There's a very interesting little island of members in this small community. It's almost like a mini Judeo-Spanish universe with a few of the aged and more elderly, a few of the 50, 48-year-olds with their young kids who go to the Jewish day school or to a private school there. So it's a medley. It's very, very tiny community. A minyan only is available if both communities, which they do, they alternate one Shabbat one and one Shabbat the other. But nevertheless, the Sephardic identity remains alive and well, is nurtured, the customs, and those who are there really yearn for and long for the food of their ancestors and the traditions and the culture. So yes, it's very much alive in this tiny island.
You said that some of the people from that community emigrated to South Africa and to other places. Do you have a close relationship with Jewish communities in other countries in Africa?
Absolutely. There is someone, Rabbi Silverhoff, who is a traveling rabbi, and he comes. So when it's Passover, it's very difficult for us to get matzah and all that we require for Pesach. So he brings with from donors from our community. So, and we are like one big family. All my friends that are in Cape Town and Johannesburg, we still keep up comms and communicate, yeah.
You're an honorary life chairperson of the Sephardic Community of Zimbabwe. Could you tell us about that?
I'm not sure how the honor or why it was bestowed on me, but I've been for many years very, very active as a Sepharad with my Judeo-Spanish love for my heritage. So I did a lot of philanthropy and very much boosted, preserved and perpetuated our herencia for Spain. And to this end, at one stage, the community was struggling with the economics and the finances in the community when people left, and it made a huge hole in our pockets. So I devised with a few other ladies and for a few years worked on a spiral-bound cookbook, which we published and reprinted multiple times. And although it wasn't an extraordinary opus, it found its way all over the world, and it raised the funds we needed. And I guess that was part of it.
So you mentioned the cooking. Can you tell us a little bit about the language? Has Ladino thrived or survived at all in that community?
I must say, alas, it has not endured with the migration of people from Zimbabwe. And it is a vanishing language throughout, and we're all struggling to preserve what we have. And that's why in this book, Stella Sephardic Table, that I had published, I made sure that most pages have what we call dicha sephardis, or refrains, where it's got the Ladino sayings that our ancestors used to say to perpetuate. And when I have guests, we speak a little in Ladino, and there's still the terms, the querencia, the way we speak to each other, cariñosos, we say with con cariño. I call my son querido, hijo mío, preciado, querida, or we say ojos de mi cara. So in that way, or viajes buenos, or something like that, it perpetuates snippets of our language. And my grandchildren who live in New York will say, Nonna, you're about to leave, and I'll say yes, and they say viajes buenos, and they're just little toddlers. So that we try to infuse it.
Is there anything else that you would like to tell us that we might have left out about this community, about Zimbabwe?
The people that were part of the community were pretty prominent in the fields of industry, in the textile, in the agricultural, ranching. Their professional roles, lawyers, teachers, science, medicine, in great fields all over the world, Sephardim. And still the Sephardim play a big role in Zimbabwe, disproportionate to their numbers. The shopping centers are Sephardim that developed them. Industry is still in the names, still Sephardim. Hydroelectric power, tea estates, there is a profound influence in that small community.
How did the independence of Zimbabwe and, well, the creation actually of the country of Zimbabwe from Rhodesia affect the Jewish community? And at any point, did the community run into any anti-Semitism?
I have not experienced anti-Semitism, and did the independence affect us? It did in the economic sense. It wasn't a political question. It was there was a change in business and running of everyday affairs, and there was an anxiety that set in of something that people felt for their children's sake. Perhaps it was time to move, and I wasn't one of those. I chose to stay, and I embrace it and feel embraced, and it's a beautiful country. It has its problems, but they are being there outweighs it all, and I love being with the people I grew up with, whether they were people of all races, and they're my friends, and we integrate extremely well. And there's great love between us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the. Thank you very much.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSephara.com. See you next week.